7 years ago, a Linwood teenager named Marie was raped at knife point. The police didn't believe her story, and she was charged with a crime. How did this happen? And what does it tell us about how rape cases are handled? Investigative reporters T. Christian Miller with ProPublica and Ken Armstrong with the Marshall Project have just published an investigative report on the case. Armstrong told David Hyde what happened after Marie went to the police.
Eventually, she was confronted about her story. She recanted, told police that she had actually made it up. Then she wound up being charged with filing a false police report. 2.5 years later, it turned out that the person who actually did rape her was arrested in Colorado, and there was evidence in his possession showing definitively that he had raped her and that she'd been telling the truth all along.
How did these doubts about her story start to set in?
You know, it was an accumulation of factors where if you looked at them in isolation, none would help explain why she wasn't believed. One of the things that came into the lead detective was a phone call from the victim's foster mother. And the foster mother, the day after this happened, called and said that she doubted whether or not her foster daughter was telling the truth. She thought perhaps this was a bid for attention. Because of that, because of the relationship between the foster mother and the foster daughter, you know, the police detective was influenced by that. And he started to see things more skeptically instead of viewing them objectively. It almost became an echo chamber where one person's doubts fed another person's doubts. And people felt like there was almost a consensus that she wasn't telling the truth. And then when police confronted her with this, they did it in the form of an interrogation. They treated her more as a criminal suspect than as a victim, and because of that, she recanted.
How else did officers mishandle this case?
They didn't follow the evidence. What you need to do in a rape case is follow the evidence and shut out the noise. They became too distracted by the noise, which were these calls or indications that some people didn't believe her. They didn't credit what evidence was there. She had bruising on both of her wrists. There was a exam done at the hospital the day that she reported rape, which showed physical injury consistent with what she had reported, not just on her wrists, but elsewhere. They simply began to discredit what was objective and available and to give too much credit to what was subjective. And then once they went down that path, they started interpreting everything in a way that removed the benefit of the doubt from her. You know, it was things as simple as eye contact. When they're interviewing her in the conference room with the police department, she's looking down. They interpret that as evasiveness. So did one of her foster mothers. You know, you and I right now are looking at each other. If I were looking down, you might interpret that as evasiveness. You might be right. You might be wrong. It's those little things that just add up. And that's what happened in this instance. What they needed to do was to continue to pursue the evidence that was available to them. And then at the end of that, they could have made a much more sound, reasonable conclusion about whether or not she had actually been raped.
What happened to her? What happened to Marie?
After she admitted making up the story of being raped, the police filed a citation against her for false reporting, and she was charged with that. That's a gross misdemeanor, which is punishable by up to a year in jail. She went to court, and she entered into an agreement where if she met certain conditions, the charge would be dismissed after a year. She had to pay a $500 fine or $500 in court costs. She had to go to counseling for a full year, the irony being that the counseling was for lying, not for being raped. She also was on probation for a year. She met the conditions and the charge was dismissed. And then only later, 2.5 years later, was she vindicated, where the man who raped her was arrested in Colorado. And then he was linked to the crime he had committed against her in Linwood in 2008.
So she's doubly victimized. What does this tell you about our criminal justice system and the way rape cases are handled?
Everything that the Linwood police did wrong, the police in Colorado did right. They chased every bit of available evidence that there was in the case. They had trace DNA evidence. They were able to get touch DNA off of a teddy bear, off of a kitchen timer. They were able to use all of these very sophisticated law enforcement tools to find O'Leary. They coordinated with one another. They shared information with one another. He committed rapes in four different jurisdictions in Colorado. Very early on, those four agencies worked together along with the FBI and along with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. And because of that coordination, they were able to basically triangulate and identify him. If they had all been working separately, they may not have ever been able to put all the pieces together and to find him.
For too long, people have not believed rape victims. What role did that play in this case?
A lot of people, their first impulse is to not believe a rape victim. I think anybody who has studied this closely will come to the conclusion that it's a dramatic fraction, it's a minority of cases where the reports are false.
What's the biggest thing you want your readers to take away from the story?
Be careful of the assumptions you make about the people around you. Don't assume that every person will react to trauma in the same way.
Speaking with KUOW's David Hyde, that's reporter Ken Armstrong with the Marshall Project. The story was co-reported by T. Christian Miller, senior reporter at ProPublica. You'll see a link to their story at KUOW.org. And This American Life did some reporting on this, too. You'll hear that on KUOW early next year.